The 2 weeks since Jack had given Hammer his word were shaping up to be the worst 2 weeks of Jack's life. More than once he contemplated walking out on Hammer and Wild and disappearing back into the forest, but he couldn't. Scarecrow Jack was an honorable man, and he always paid his debts. Hammer and Wild were finally ready to leave, and Jack led them back through the forest to the border fort. The sooner this was over, the better he'd like it. And yet, in the end, he hadn't said anything, because they'd only laughed. But there was definitely something wrong about the border fort, something unnatural. He could feel it in his bones. He decided to say nothing for the time being, but keep his eyes and ears open. He had a bad feeling his problems weren't anywhere near being over. The storm finally broke over the forest. The rain came down in solid sheets, slamming through the foliage and bouncing back from the forest floor. Open trails quickly became a morass of mud and soaking mulch. Birds and animals shuddered in their lairs at the continuous pounding of the rain. And in all the forest, nothing moved save three determined outlaws already soaked to the skin. The thunder rolled on and on, barely pausing long enough for the intermittent flashes of lightning that lit the forest in stark black and white. The outlaws moved slowly from cover to cover, wading through deep puddles and treacherous mud, slipping and sliding and falling painfully until only Hammer's will kept them moving. The moon hid behind clouds and torrents of rain, and the party's lantern light couldn't travel far through the deluge. Scarecrow Jack's woodcraft was tested to the limit as familiar landmarks became strange and unfamiliar. But finally, he brought them to a halt back at the edge of the great clearing. The three outlaws sheltered under a tree and studied the dim silhouette of the border fort through the driving rain. Jack ignored the cold and the wet. He was used to it. The rain soaked his rags and dripped continuously from his face, but beyond a certain point, he simply didn't feel it. He had an animal's indifference for conditions beyond his control. Besides, judging from the way Hammer and Wild had been reacting whenever they got downwind of him, it was probably time his rags had a good wash. Jack glanced at Wild, standing miserably beside him, huddled inside a thin cloak. The rain had slicked the archer's long hair down around his face, and in the dim light he looked not unlike a half-drowned river rat.
That damn gold better be there, or someone else will pay. That's what I'm saying. Some ass will pay.
Wild pulled up his cloak's high collar to keep out the rain. It formed a kind of funnel that guided the rain down his neck and back.
Ah, bloody hell!
Hammer ignored the sudden rise in cursing and glowered through the rain at the border fort. Like Jack, he seemed unaffected by the cold and the wet.
At least now we can be fairly sure there won't be any guards on the battlement. They won't be expecting anyone to be abroad in weather like this.
No one with any sense would be.
Wild wiped his nose on his sleeve.
How much longer do we have to stand around here? I'm catching my death in this rain.
Hammer looked at Jack.
Is this storm going to go off soon?
Jack looked about him and considered for a moment.
Unlikely. It may even get worse. This storm's been building for a long time.
All right, we go now. Stick close together. Whatever happens, no one is to go off on their own.
He looked about him one last time, hooded his lantern, and the three ran across the open clearing. Out in the open, the rain was coming down so hard it drowned out every other sound, and even with the lantern and the lightning, it was hard to see anything more than a few feet away. Wild lurched and slid in the mud, and Jack was hard put to keep him moving. Hammer was soon only a vague shadow in front of them. There was no sign of the fort. The driving rain chilled Jack to the bone. The clearing seemed much wider than he remembered, and he began to wonder if Hammer had lost his bearings and led them past the fort. Finally, a massive stone wall loomed out of the rain before them, and they had to stumble to a halt to avoid crashing into it. The wall gave some protection from the wind, but that was all. Jack shook himself like a dog, but it didn't help much. He couldn't recall having felt this wet in his life. The rain was so heavy now it even made breathing difficult. Hammer gestured for Jack to unsling his coil of rope. It was no use trying to speak. The rain and the thunder made it impossible to hear. Jack unslung the rope and checked that the grapnel was still secure. He looked up at the wall, and the rain beat harshly on his face until he had to turn it away. He took a moment to compose himself, blinking rapidly to get the rain out of his eyes, and then he snatched one quick look and threw the grapnel up into the air, aiming as best he could. It just cleared the battlements and fell to lodge securely somewhere beyond them. Jack pulled the line taut and looked at Hammer, who nodded for him to go first. Jack took a firm grip on the rope, checked that it would take his weight, and began to walk his way up the sodden stone wall. The rain made both the rope and the wall horribly slippery, and more than once, only quick reflexes and a death-like grip saved him from a nasty fall. When he finally reached the battlements, he was almost too tired to pull himself over them. He sat on the catwalk to catch his breath. Jack climbed reluctantly to his feet and tugged twice on the rope to signal that it was clear for the next man. Wild made even harder going of the climb, and Jack had to reach down and practically haul the man up the last few feet. Hammer came last and made it look easy. They started along the narrow catwalk, heading for the steps that led down into the courtyard. Duncan McNeil led his team through the fort, heading for the cellar. The constant roar of the storm came dimly to them through the thick stone walls. McNeil and Constance carried lanterns, while Flint and the Dancer held their swords at the ready.
I don't see why we have to look in the cellar again. We've already established the gold isn't there.
It's got to be here somewhere. It occurred to me that there might be a sub-cellar underneath the first, or even a hidden passageway.
And if there isn't?
Then we'll go through every damn room in this fort and take it apart brick by brick until we do find the gold. Are you sure you can't see where it is?
I'll try again, Duncan. But I can tell you now it's not going to work. Something nearby is still interfering with my magic.
She stopped, and the others stopped with her. Constance put her lantern down on the floor, massaged her temples with her fingertips, and closed her eyes. The low background mutter of the storm was a distraction, but she finally put it out of her mind. Darkness gathered, smothering her sight. Bitter cold swept through Constance, and a feeling of unease grew and grew until it bordered on panic. She fought to control it, and as she did, her sight suddenly cleared, and she saw a single, huge eye. It stared in her direction and slowly grew aware of her presence. Constance immediately broke off the contact and shielded her mind as thoroughly as she could. In that brief glimpse, she'd sensed something she had no desire to see again. She huddled frightened in the darkness, but even inside her shield, she could sense something awful prowling through the dark in search of her. It slowly moved away.
Well?
There's something here in the fort with us. I don't know what it is or where it is, but it's very old and very deadly.
Oh, don't start that again. There's no one in the fort but us. You're just feeling the strain a bit, that's all. We all are.
Constance looked at him coldly but said nothing. With her sight still clouded, he might just be right, but she didn't think so. McNeil started down the corridor again, and Flint and the Dancer followed him. Constance picked up her lantern and brought up the rear. Her hand trembled with suppressed anger, and shadows swayed menacingly around the team. McNeil didn't look back at her. Truth to tell, he wasn't so sure Constance wasn't right. He remembered how strongly she'd reacted to the cellar before, and much as he wanted to, he couldn't ignore her warnings. She had the sight.
You'd believe Salamander.
Yes, he would have. But Constance didn't have Salamander's experience, and unless she came up with something more concrete than a few upset feelings, he couldn't justify staying away from the cellar, even if the place did give him the creeps. Constance tried hard not to sulk, or at least not visibly. She worked so hard, tried her best, and still he didn't trust her. When she'd first found out which ranger team she was joining, she'd been so thrilled she all but danced on the spot. She knew all about Sergeant Duncan McNeil. She'd followed his career at a distance for years. Ever since he protected her from the demons when she was just a child, living in the small town of King's Deep. She pulled as many strings as she dared to get herself assigned to his team, all so that she could repay him for what he'd done for her, by being the best damned witch he'd ever had. Constance had other dreams about him too, but she rarely allowed herself to think about them. And now here she was, on her first mission with him, and it was all going wrong, because he wouldn't give her a chance. Constance's lower lip jutted rebelliously.
I'll show him. I'll show them all.
It didn't take long to reach the cellar. It looked just as it had before, a mess. McNeil shook his head. God knew how long they'd been dumping rubbish there. every day since the fort was first occupied by the look of it. Constance hung her lantern from a wall holder while Flint looked disgustedly around the cellar.
Everything but gold. You don't really want us to dig through this stuff, do you, Duncan?
Afraid so.
Ugh! I just hope I don't catch anything contagious.
That's not all we have to worry about. Have you noticed how cold it's got?
The others stopped and looked at her. McNeil frowned as he suddenly realized his breath was steaming on the air before him. All at once he shivered, his bare face and hands seared by the biting cold. He pulled his cloak around him and tried to remember if it had been this cold when he first entered the cellar. He had a strong feeling it hadn't. He looked at the others, and their breath misted in the air, too. He looked around him, and his flesh began to creep as he noticed for the first time a faint pearly haze of hoarfrost forming on the cellar walls.
It can't be that cold down here. It can't.
He forced himself to concentrate on the matter in hand and stared determinedly at the junk covering the floor.
If there is a sub-cellar, you'll probably get to it by a trapdoor in the floor. Start shifting this rubbish out of the way. Pile it up against the walls, and then we can get a clear look at the floor.
The others nodded and set to work. McNeil put his lantern down safely out of the way and joined them. Shifting the assorted debris took some time and not a little effort, but eventually they uncovered a trapdoor. It lay in the exact middle of the cellar floor, a good 6 square feet of solid oak held shut by 2 heavy steel bolts. McNeil knelt down by the trapdoor and looked closely at the bolts, but felt strangely reluctant to touch them. He rubbed his hands together to drive out the cold and buy him some thinking time. They were just ordinary, everyday steel bolts. There was no reason at all why he shouldn't touch them, except that all the hairs on the back of his neck were standing up and both his arms were covered in goose flesh, and none of it came from the bitter cold in the cellar. He looked at Constance.
Try your sight. See if you can sense anything about the trapdoor and what lies beneath it.
The witch nodded and stared at the trapdoor. Her eyes became vague and far away. Deep in the earth, something stirred and strove to wake. The weight of earth and stone lay heavy upon it, and time gnawed at its blood and bones. The darkness came and went too swiftly to disturb its slumber. But now at last, the chains of sleep began to fall away as day by day it drifted closer to waking. It dreamed foul dreams, and the world went mad. Soon its long sleep would end, and the world would tremble when the sleeper spoke its name. Constance broke the contact, and once again her sight became vague and clouded. She swayed sickly and almost fell, nauseated by the few faint traces of the thing she'd sensed. McNeil took her arm, concerned at her sudden paleness, and she smiled weakly at him.
I'll be all right in a moment, Duncan.
What did you see?
The same thing I've seen before, only this time I saw it a little more clearly. There's something down there, Duncan. Something old and evil and unspeakably powerful. It's sleeping for the moment, but it could wake at any time. It sent the dreams that drove the people here insane.
All right, Constance. I believe you. I don't want to, but it doesn't look like I have any choice. What is it? A demon?
I don't think so. It's older than that. I couldn't get a fix on exactly where it is, but I don't think it's directly under the trapdoor. It's somewhere deeper.
We've got to take a look down there, Constance. Is it dangerous?
Yes, but don't ask me how.
That's not good enough.
It's the best I can do. Why do we have to go down there now anyway? What's wrong with waiting till the reinforcements get here?
Think about it. I've been ordered to find the gold at any cost. How is it going to look on our records if they find out we knew about the trapdoor and didn't investigate because we were too scared? No, Constance, I'm opening that trapdoor and we're going down, and that's all there is to it. Flint, Dancer, stand ready. Once that trapdoor is open, if anything comes out, kill it first and ask questions later, if at all.
Got it.
The dancer smiled.
Keep your magic ready and help where you can, but don't get in our way. We're the fighters. That's our job.
The witch nodded, and McNeil reached down and took hold of the first bolt on the trapdoor. It seemed to stir slowly under his fingertips, as though it were alive.
Huh.
He snatched back his hand and knelt down to study the bolt closely. It seemed perfectly normal.
Just nerves. The It's all just nerves.
He wiped his fingers on his trousers and tried again. He held the bolt firmly and pulled hard. It slid back smoothly. McNeil tried the second bolt. McNeil took hold of the heavy steel ring in the center of the trap door. He pulled firmly, but the trap door didn't budge. The muscles in his back and shoulders swelled as he pitted all his strength against the stubborn wood, and then the trap door suddenly flew open. And out of the trapdoor mouth gushed an endless fountain of thick, viscous blood. It roared up to splash against the ceiling and fell back again in a stinking crimson rain. More and more blood came roaring up past the open trapdoor, gallon upon gallon, soaking everything in the cellar. McNeil and the others scrambled back from the flying blood, but there was nowhere they could hide from it. The blood continued to roar up from under the cellar, forced out by some unimaginable pressure, and then stopped as suddenly as it had begun. McNeil slowly raised his head and looked around him. Blood dripped from the scarlet ceiling and ran down the walls. It steamed slightly in the cold air. The floor and the trapdoor looked as though they had been painted red. The stink of blood was almost overpowering. McNeil sloshed cautiously forward to stare into the dripping opening, and the others came forward to join him. They all stood liberally spattered with blood. Flint shook her head disgustedly.
I've seen battlefields that were less bloody than this. Where the hell did it all come from?
Beats me.
McNeil stared down into the darkness that lay below the cellar. Nothing moved in the impenetrable gloom, but the air was thick with the stench of freshly spilled blood. Constance handed him his lantern, and he lowered it carefully into the darkness. The amber light showed him a set of rough wooden steps leading down into a narrow earthen tunnel that fell away into the ground. The light didn't carry far, but for as McNeil could see, the steps and the tunnel walls shone slick with blood. The others crowded in around him to take a look, and then all of them froze. McNeil couldn't tell whether the sound was drawing closer or moving away. He looked at the others, but it was clear they weren't sure either. The sound stopped. McNeil put down his lantern beside the opening and drew his sword.
Flint, you and Constance stay here to guard the opening. Dancer, you come with me. We're going to take a look at what's hiding down in that tunnel.
The dancer smiled and drew his sword. McNeil looked at Flint.
If anything comes out of this trapdoor but us, kill it. If something goes wrong, shut the trapdoor and bolt it, whether we're out or not. If there is something dangerous down in that tunnel, I don't want it running loose in the fort. When you're sure the trapdoor is secure, get out of here and report back to the reinforcements. They have to be warned.
We can't just abandon you.
Yes, we can. He's right, Constance. Our duty comes first, and rangers are expendable. It's part of the job.
The witch looked away. McNeil looked at her for a moment and then picked up his lantern and stepped carefully down into the opening and onto the first of the wooden steps. The narrow slat shifted slightly as he put his weight on it, but after an uncertain moment, it settled again. He slowly descended into the darkness, holding the lantern out before him. The dancer followed behind him, sword at the ready. Shadows swayed menacingly around them as they descended into the earth. McNeil counted 13 steps before he found himself facing the narrow tunnel that ran under the cellar.
Unlucky for some.
McNeil moved forward a little to give the dancer room to join him. The circular tunnel stood barely 6 feet in diameter, and McNeil had to bend forward to avoid banging his head on the ceiling. There was sufficient room for McNeil and the dancer to walk side by side, but only just. The walls were smoothly rounded and bore no marks of human tools. The clay-like earth was tightly packed and slick with running blood. More blood lay in shallow pools on the tunnel floor.
It's like walking through something's guts.
McNeil wrinkled his nose at the stench. He stood listening for a long moment, the dancer waiting patiently at his side. But there was no trace of the sound they'd heard earlier. The two men walked forward into the gloom. McNeil found the dancer's presence reassuring. The darkness and the silence and the stench reminded him too much of his time in the Darkwood. He clutched his sword hilt tightly, aware his hand was sweating profusely despite the cold. It didn't matter what was waiting for him. He'd face it and kill it, and that was all there was to it. He was a guard and a ranger, and he'd never backed away from anything in his life.
But there was a time when you wanted to. The demons came out of the long night faster than you could kill them. And you wanted to turn and run. You might have too, if the dawn hadn't broken first. The sun rose and the long night fell and the demons retreated with the darkness. The dawn saved you. And now you'll never know whether or not you would have run.
No.
McNeil shut out the insistent voice and concentrated on the darkness ahead. The tunnel seemed to be curving gradually downwards, and he wondered uneasily just how deep it ran. His boots slid and skidded on the blood-soaked earth floor, and shadows ducked and weaved around him as the lantern rose and fell in his hand. He shot a quick glance at the dancer, but he seemed entirely unperturbed, his face as calm and bland as it always was. And then the dancer held up a hand and stopped suddenly. McNeil stopped beside him.
What is it?
Listen.
As Duncan listened, he realized the sound was drawing gradually nearer. It was a sliding, bumping sound, as though something heavy was being dragged along the tunnel floor toward them. McNeil put the lantern down on the floor behind him, safely out of the way. He glanced quickly at the dancer and saw that he was smiling. The two men stood together, swords at the ready, and waited for whatever it was to come to them. A huge form lurched out of the darkness ahead. First, it was only a pale gray shape filling the tunnel, but as it drew nearer, McNeil gradually realized he was facing a giant. Standing upright, the giant would have been 20 feet tall and more, but in the cramped confines of the tunnel, it was forced to crawl on hands and knees like an animal. Its skin and hair were milky white, and its great, staring eyes were blind. It was entirely naked, covered with dirt and foulness and fresh bloody smears from the tunnel.
How long has this been down here?
McNeil wondered what it found to feed on, crawling through the tunnels under the earth like a vast, misshapen worm. Its hands were huge and broad, the stubby fingers tipped with long, curving fingernails grown into claws. Its teeth were long and pointed, and the great, wide face held no human emotions. Saliva dripped from its snarling mouth, and the giant sniffed at the air, though searching for the scent that brought it crawling up out of the depths of the earth. Its shoulders filled the narrow tunnel from side to side, its back rubbed against the ceiling, and its hands and knees sank into the blood-stained floor.
Look at the size of it! Look at the bloody size of it!
The crawling giant pulled itself slowly toward McNeil and the dancer, and they cautiously backed away as they realized it wasn't alone. Behind it came another giant, and another. From further down the tunnel came the sound of still more giants hidden in the darkness. The giant in the lead raised its great head. McNeil and the dancer winced away from the awful sound, and the giant hauled itself forward with unexpected speed, the long muscular arms reaching blindly out for them. McNeil stood his ground and lashed out at the nearest hand with his sword. The blade cut deep and grated on bone. The giant jerked its hand back, the sword stuck in the thick flesh. McNeil had to use both hands to pull it free. He staggered back, his mind still dazed by the sheer size of his foe. The hand alone had to be a good 2 feet wide across the knuckles. He threw himself to the floor as the hand closed into a fist and swept ponderously through the air where he'd been standing. The fist slammed into the wall. The giant went berserk with rage, battering the walls with both fists as it tried to find its enemy. The dancer moved in beside McNeil as he scrambled backwards out of range, his sword gleaming dully in the lantern light. The giant hauled itself forward, and the dancer stepped inside its reach and cut both the creature's wrists. A thick purple blood spurted on the air. The giant swung one fist with unexpected speed. The dancer threw himself backwards, but couldn't move fast enough. The giant hand just clipped his shoulder in passing, and the dancer was thrown against the tunnel wall with numbing force. The giant pulled itself forward, the great white form filling the tunnel, battering the bloody walls and ceiling. Behind it, another crawling giant fought blindly to get past the first. McNeil staggered to his feet, grabbed the lantern, and hacked at the giant's arm. More blood flew on the air, but still the creature wouldn't stop. McNeil and the dancer had almost reached the steps when the giant suddenly lunged forward. The left hand caught hold of McNeil's shoulder, and the right fastened onto the dancer's sword arm. McNeil groaned as the huge hand crushed his shoulder in a vice-like grip, and the sword fell from his numbed hand. The dancer's face was white from the pressure on his arm, but somehow he still held onto his sword, though he hadn't the strength to use it. The giant pulled them slowly forward, its mouth stretching wide to reveal huge, jagged teeth. Flint and Constance came charging down into the tunnel. Constance raised her hand.
Sarah!
A searing white light flashed down the tunnel from her upraised hand and struck the giant in the face. The blazing heat burnt away its face, leaving only charred bone and empty eye sockets. It dropped McNeil and the dancer and pawed feebly at its ruined head. The dancer shifted his sword to his left hand, stepped forward, and cut the giant's throat. Thick purple blood gushed out onto the tunnel floor, and the giant collapsed and lay twitching in its own gore. Behind it, another crawling giant tore at its flesh and began to pull itself past the unmoving body, still searching for prey. McNeil snatched up his sword, and he and the dancer retreated back to the steps. Constance still held the stance of summoning, a pure white force crackling between her hands. Flint stood at her side, sword at the ready. They stood guard as McNeil and the dancer pulled themselves exhaustedly up the stairs and out into the cellar. Flint went up next, and finally Constance lowered her hands and the fire went out. She scrambled up the steps and out into the cellar. McNeil slammed the trapdoor shut after Constance and pushed home both the bolts. Barely a second later, the trapdoor shuddered violently as a giant fist beat furiously against it from below. The hammering continued for several minutes while McNeil and the others watched anxiously, and then it stopped, leaving only an echoing silence. Constance sat down suddenly, as though all the strength had gone out of her. McNeil leaned on his sword and concentrated on getting his breathing back to normal. He realized he was still clinging desperately to his lantern and put it down on the floor beside him. His hands were trembling now that the action was over, and not only from fatigue. Giants in the earth. Perhaps that was what had happened to all the bodies. His mind's eye showed him an army of crawling giants struggling up through the trapdoor, stealing the bodies and then dragging them back down to the secret places of the earth. Duncan shook his head to clear it. His hands and his breathing had steadied, and he looked cautiously at the others to see if they'd noticed his momentary weakness. Flint and the dancer were sitting side by side. The dancer was trying to clean his sword one-handed while Flint massaged some feeling back into the arm the giant had crushed. Constance was kneeling beside the trapdoor, staring at it worriedly.
What's the matter? The trapdoor will keep the giants out, won't it?
That's the point. As far as I can see, the giants aren't there anymore. They've just gone. Vanished.
McNeil looked at the trapdoor and then at the witch.
Just how dependable is your sight at the moment?
Not very. It comes and goes, and calling up Balefire for you weakened my magic considerably. But I'm sure about this, Duncan. There's nothing down there now. Nothing at all.
That's impossible. Those giants were flesh and blood, not ghosts.
The one I hit was very much alive. I've still got most of its blood all over me.
Flint smiled fondly at the dancer.
Your biggest bag yet. You should have brought the body back with you. We could have had it stuffed.
I'll remember next time.
There's nothing down there now. There's no trace of the giants at all. Open the trap door and you'll see I'm right.
They all looked at each other, but nobody said anything. Finally, McNeil hefted his sword and shrugged unhappily.
All right, damn it. Let's take a look. Everyone stand ready. Same procedure as before. If it moves, kill it.
The dancer rose to his feet in a single lithe movement, the cleaning rag gone from his hand and his sword at the ready. Flint got to her feet a little more slowly and gave him a wry smile.
Ugh, show off.
Constance got up and moved back from the trapdoor, scowling worriedly. McNeil hesitated and looked thoughtfully at the witch.
Can you call up that balefire again?
No, just using it once drained most of my strength. I'm a witch, not a sorceress, and I know my limitations.
McNeil nodded and bent over the trapdoor. He stood listening for a moment, but couldn't hear anything moving down in the tunnel. Duncan pulled back the two bolts. Everything was quiet. He braced himself, heaved the trapdoor open, and stepped quickly away. The trapdoor slammed back onto the floor, revealing the still, silent, dark opening. The rangers waited tensely, but nothing stirred in the darkness. McNeil took his lantern and lowered it cautiously into the opening. For as far as he could see, the tunnel was empty. He looked back at the others.
Nothing. No sign they were ever there.
I told you, they're gone.
Looks like it. But I'm not going down into the tunnel to check.
He started to close the trapdoor and then stopped and looked closely at its underside. The heavy wood had been split and splintered by savage blows from giant fists. McNeil shut the trapdoor and slammed the two bolts home. He thought for a moment, and then looked at the others.
Help me move some of those heavy barrels on top of the trapdoor. I want this opening blocked off completely.
Among the four of them, they were able to manhandle two great casks stuffed with rusting ironwork onto the trapdoor. The wood creaked loudly under the weight of them. The rangers leaped two more barrels against them just to be sure, and then stepped back and admired their handiwork.
That should hold them.
That would hold a rabid elephant. And I should like at this stage to point out that I am a swordsman, not a laborer.
Would you rather the giants get out? We had to fight them again.
The dancer thought about that for a moment and then nodded eagerly. The trouble is, he probably means it, thought McNeil.
We have a problem.
We have several. Which did you have in mind?
Well, what if the gold is down there in the tunnel somewhere? How the hell are we going to get it out?
We're not. I'm damned if I'm going back down in there armed only with a sword. They don't pay me enough for that. In fact, they couldn't pay me enough. There isn't that much money in the world. We'll wait till the reinforcements get here and let them figure out a way to get down there in force.
Flint and the dancer nodded soberly. Constance frowned, but said nothing.
Ah!
McNeil stretched his aching muscles. He never used to get this tired after a sword fight. He must be getting out of condition. It was time to start dieting again. McNeil scowled. He hated diets.
All right. Let's get out of here. You know, times are changing. I can remember when deserted forts just had rats in their cellar.
Yeah. Next time, let's just put some poison down.
The rangers left the cellar. In the darkness below, something stirred in its sleep. Hammer, Wild, and Scarecrow Jack stood shivering in the reception hall. The roar of the rain maintained a loud murmur outside, but they could hear themselves think in here. They shook off the worst of the rain, then looked around them in the pale glow from Hammer's lantern. Wild produced flint and steel and lit a torch he took from a wall bracket. The flaring light filled the hall with an amber glow and unsteady shadows. Four horses regarded the newcomers with grave suspicion. The outlaws looked around them, taking in the blood-stained surroundings and the four empty nooses hanging from the overhead beam.
What the bloody hell happened here? Hammer, you never told us it would be like this.
Everything was normal here when I delivered the gold. I knew something pretty bad must have happened when the fort fell out of contact, but this... I don't know. It doesn't matter anyway. Whatever happened here, it's over now. Those blood-stains have been dry for some time. Unless it interferes with us, it's none of our business. Let's just get the gold and get the hell out of here.
Wild glowered uncertainly about him.
I don't know, Hammer. I never banked on anything like this.
Is that right? What did you think? That we could just walk in and out again as easy as that? If you want to get rich, you have to be prepared to take a few risks.
Calculated risks are one thing, Hammer. This is different.
Not going soft on me, are you, Edmund? I'd hate to think you were going soft on me.
Wild met Hammer's gaze for a moment, then his eyes faltered and he looked away.
Have I ever let you down?
Of course not, Edmund. You never let me down because you know that the first time you do, I'll kill you. You don't want to worry about what happened here, my friend. You want to worry about what I'll do to you if you don't stop wasting my time. Now then, we go that way to get down to the cellars. You go first.
Wild looked at the door Hammer indicated. A wide, dark stain had soaked into the wood, and the heavy metal lock had been smashed apart from the other side. The bowman handed his torch to Jack without looking at him, and walked slowly over to the door. He drew his sword and hesitated for a long moment. Wild suddenly pulled the door open and stepped back quickly, holding his sword out before him. There was only a dark corridor, silent, empty, and daubed with old blood. Wild hefted his sword, but made no attempt to enter the darkness. Jack stepped forward and silently offered Wild his torch back. Wild took it and briefly nodded his thanks without looking around. He started down the corridor, and Jack followed him. Hammer brought up the rear, carrying his lantern in one hand and the sword from his hip in the other. The long sword hilt above his shoulder glowed very faintly in the dark. Shadows swayed menacingly around the three outlaws as Wild led them deeper into the border fort. The air grew steadily colder. Scarecrow Jack looked warily about him and wished he was back in the forest. Ever since he'd entered the fort, his instincts seemed muffled and confused. The bloodstains bothered him. With so much blood spilt, why weren't there any bodies? Maybe something ate them. Jack frowned and shook his head. Being indoors was getting to him. Jack hated being inside any house or building, behind walls and under roofs. They made him feel trapped, hemmed in. That was partly why he'd left his village all those years ago and made his home in the forest. The forest was alive. The stone and timber buildings were dead and silent. He felt more alive among the great trees than he ever had among his people. He went back occasionally to visit his family, but he always slept out of doors during his blessedly short stays. The border fort worried him in many ways. He found the thick stone walls oppressive. He kept feeling that they were crowding in around him. The ceiling was uncomfortably low, and he kept wanting to duck his head. It hadn't bothered him too much the first time he'd entered the fort. He'd been so involved in his mission, he hadn't had time to think about where he was. But now he couldn't seem to think about anything else. And above all that, there was a feeling of something terrible, somewhere close at hand. Even with his instincts clouded, Jack knew it was there, just as he always knew where the hidden trails were in the forest, or what the weather was going to be. He tried to get some kind of feel for what it was he found so threatening, but his mind couldn't seem to get it in focus. Whatever it was very old and very deadly, and they were getting closer to it all the time. Scarecrow Jack wiped at the cold sweat on his face and wished he was somewhere else. Anywhere else. Wild led the way around a corner, then stopped dead in his tracks. Jack and Hammer moved quickly forward to stand beside him. The corridor ahead was choked from wall to wall and from floor to ceiling with a thick, dirty, gray web. At the edges, it frayed away into delicate individual strands, but the rest of it was a sprawling, chaotic tangle that thickened at the center into a pulsing, solid mass. It was impossible to tell how far back the web went, but it looked to be several feet at least. Shadows moved in the web, dark shapes that came and went with unnerving speed. Some were small, barely a few inches wide, but others were easily the size of a man's head, and a few were larger still. Every now and again, Jack thought he caught a glimpse of burning, blood-red eyes. Jack sniffed cautiously at the cold air. It smelled foul, as though something dead and unburied lay close at hand.
Did you come this way earlier?
I think so, but I never saw anything like this.
It's obviously been here for some time. No spider could weave a web that size in a few hours.
It wasn't spiders that made this web. No spider spins like that. There's no pattern to the strands. No pattern that makes any sense.
Maybe a strange kind of web means a strange kind of spider.
Is this what happened to the people here?
How the hell should I know? I suppose it's possible, but I'd bet against it. If they had been attacked by spiders, the bodies would still be here, wouldn't they?
Not necessarily. Some spiders drag their prey back to their webs and spin cocoons around them. Then they either store the bodies to eat later, or use them to lay their eggs in. The larvae eat their way out of the body after they hatch.
The outlaws looked at each other, then peered into the web to see if any of the unmoving shadows were human in shape.
We'll have to go back and try another way.
We can't. There's no other way that will get us down to the cellar. We'll just have to cut our way through this mess, that's all. Cut it or burn it.
He gestured to Wild, who stepped warily forward and thrust his torch at the nearest clump of web. It blackened and steamed, but it wouldn't break or shrivel. Wild pulled the torch back and looked almost challengingly at Hammer, who scowled at Wild and then at the web.
All right, we do it the hard way. Wild, you take the left, I'll take the right. Jack, hold the lantern and watch out for spiders.
Jack took the lantern from him. Hammer stepped forward and hacked at the nearest clump of web with his sword. It parted reluctantly under the blow and clung stickily to the blade. Hammer had to use both hands to jerk the sword free. Wild smiled mockingly as he placed his torch in a wall bracket, safely out of the way. Hammer lifted his sword to cut at the web again, then stopped as the two separated strands of web before him slowly wound themselves together again. Wild backed away. Jack bit his lower lip uncertainly. He was starting to get a very bad feeling about the web. Deep in the web, something moved. A shadow stirred in the middle of the milky haze. It was tall, like a man, and the three outlaws watched uneasily as it moved slowly toward them, walking through the thick strands of web like a man striding through mists. Jack and Wild fell back a pace as it drew nearer, but Hammer held his ground, sword at the ready. The shadow loomed up against the boundary of the web, looking more and more like a man, except it was thinner and bonier than any man should be. It reached out a hand toward Hammer, and the web bulged outward and split open. Milky strands parted stickily as the bony hand thrust forward. The fingers were nothing more than yellowed bone, crusted with old dried blood and rotting strings of meat. The web bulged out again, stretching and tearing, and like some obscene mockery of birth, the creature clawed its way out of the web and stood before the three outlaws, smiling a smile that would never end. It was mostly bone, a living skeleton of a man who had died long ago. Scraps and strings of decaying meat still clung here and there to bones stained with blood that had dried long before. But it was the web that held the grisly figure together and gave it shape and purpose. Where muscle and sinew should have been, thick, milky strands glistened slickly in the dim light, curling and twisting slowly around the dead bones like dreaming snakes. The creature looked unhurriedly from one outlaw to another. Nothing moved in the empty eye sockets, but still it saw them, and its death's head grin never wavered.
Is it alive or dead?
It's dead, one way or another.
Hammer stepped forward and cut at the creature's throat with his sword. The blade jarred against the solid bone and glanced away harmlessly. Hammer quickly recovered his balance and cut deliberately at the raised arm, aiming for the strands of web that held it together. The sword tip sliced easily through the milky strands, cutting them in two, but the severed end flowed back together in a second, as though they'd never been parted. Hammer froze, startled, and the creature lashed out with a bony fist. Hammer threw himself aside at the last moment, and the skeletal fist swept on to smash into the corridor wall with enough force to crack several of the smaller bones. The creature recovered its balance in a moment and turned its endless grin on the outlaws again. It felt no pain. It had been dead a long time and was beyond such human weaknesses as suffering, or compassion, or mercy.
What the hell is this? Some kind of lich? Jack, you ever seen anything like this before?
No. There's never been anything like this in the forest. It has no place among the living.
That's where you're wrong, Nature Boy. I've seen this before in the forest. In the Tanglewood, to be exact, on the border of the Darkwood. The web is alive. A single living creature that devours its prey by enveloping it. And after it's sucked the meat off the bones, it puts them back together again and sends them out into the world to find new prey. Pretty smart for a web. Hard to kill, too.
Hammer glanced briefly at Wild.
What were you doing in a dangerous place like the Tanglewood?
I used to be a hero. Remember?
And that was a long time ago.
The creature suddenly lunged forward and the outlaws scattered. Wild drew an arrow from his quiver and knocked it into his bow. The creature spun around to face him and Wild sneered into its unwavering grin. Wild aimed and let fly in a single smooth motion, and the arrow punched through the creature's skull and out the back, sending the creature staggering backwards. It slammed up against a closed door, and Wild fired three more arrows in quick succession. The heavy shaft smashed through the skull and sank deep into the wood of the door, pinning the skull to the door. It struggled to get free, but the deep-sunk arrows held it fast. Wild looked at Hammer with all his old arrogance.
I'm as good as I ever was, Hammer. And don't you forget it.
He broke off abruptly as the creature sagged back against the door and went limp. It hung lifelessly, supported only by the arrows through its skull. Then the strands of web that held the creature together writhed and coiled and fell away, dropping to the floor. They humped and slithered across the floor with unnatural speed and plunged back into the main mass of the web. Blood-stained bones collected in a heap on the floor until all the web was gone and only the skull remained, pinned high up on the door. The jawbone was the last to fall, taking the endless grin with it. Jack started to say something, then stopped and looked at the web. Something new was happening in the seething, milky heart. He could feel it. Wild and Hammer followed Jack's gaze as the thick, ropey strands writhed and twisted until the whole cloudy mass was boiling with slow, sluggish movements. Wild knocked an arrow to his bow and fired it into the writhing mass. The arrow disappeared without a trace. A long strand of milky web raised itself into the air like a tentacle, and Jack had to throw himself to one side as it suddenly lashed out at him. Hammer stood his ground and sliced through the tentacle with his sword. The severed end fell writhing to the floor. What was left of the tentacle rose further out of the main mass until it was the same length as before. More tentacles surged up out of the web, clawing at the air like so many searching fingers. Jack backed quickly away.
We've got to get out of here, Hammer! There's no way we can fight something like that!
He's right. It can't be killed. We'll have to go back.
No, there is a way.
Hammer sheathed his sword on his hip and reached up for the hilt of the long sword on his back. The long leather-wrapped hilt seemed almost to leap into his hand, and the great length of blade swept out of its scabbard in one swift movement. The sword was almost 7 feet long and 6 inches wide at the crosspiece. The weight must have been immense, but Hammer hefted the blade one-handed as though it weighed nothing. The gleaming steel had a sickly yellow sheen that was subtly unpleasant to the eye. Jack winced at the sight of it. Even with his senses muffled, he could feel the power of the sword. Magic roared and raged in the long blade, barely contained by ancient spells. Without even knowing what the power was, Jack knew it was evil. He also had a strong feeling that just possibly the sword was alive and aware. Hammer stepped forward, and the great sword leapt out into the center of the web. Milky white streamers frayed out into the air as the trembling web tried to draw back from the glowing blade. The longsword burrowed deep into the heart of the webbing like a hound hot on a scent, dragging Hammer along behind it. And where the glowing blade touched the web, the thick, milky stuff decayed and fell away like strands of rotting gossamer. The web boiled, heaving and bubbling, throwing out long arms and streamers as though it could run from what was destroying it. Hammer moved slowly forward, his face twisted with distaste and the stench of rotting tissues, and the sword burned a bitter yellow. He swept the blade back and forth, and the web fell apart in rotting clumps. Dark creatures stumbled forward, lurching out of the milky heart. Patchwork things of bone and horror, obscene, unliving puppets manipulated by the web. They threw themselves at Hammer, bony hands reaching out like yellowed claws, only to rot and fall apart as the glowing blade caressed them in passing, releasing the long dead bones from servitude. The corridor was 9 feet high and 8 feet wide, and the web had filled it for 15 feet. When Hammer finally came to a halt and looked back, all that remained were a few blackened streamers hanging still and lifeless from the walls and ceiling, and a scattering of old bones on the bare flagstones, at peace at last. Hammer looked at his sword. The long blade glowed brightly with the same yellow sheen as a corpse fire on a cairn.
You damned fool. That's Wolfsbane, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
He thrust the long sword back into its scabbard. The sword slid slowly into place, as though reluctant to be sheathed. Jack checked the candle in his lantern. Somehow he'd managed to hold on to it through all the excitement, and miraculously it was still alight. Wild retrieved his torch from the wall bracket and then glared suddenly at Hammer.
I thought that Hell Sword was lost in the Demon War.
It was. I found it.
Then keep away from me, Hammer. Keep well away.
What's the matter, Wild? Frightened?
Of that thing? Yes. So would you be, if that sword hadn't already got its hooks into you.
Jack didn't know what they were talking about and decided that for the moment, at least, he really didn't give a damn. The web was dead, along with its creatures, but there were other dangers.
Look, the long sword worries me too, but I'm more concerned with finding the gold and getting the hell out of the fort before the Rangers find us.
You're right. Since you were stupid enough to let yourself be seen, the Rangers could still be searching the fort for you and we can't afford to be found. If they're anywhere nearby, they couldn't have missed hearing us. We'd better find a secure place to lie low for an hour or so, give things a chance to settle down again.
Are you crazy? I'm not staying in this godforsaken place 1 minute longer than I have to.
Wild glared unflinchingly at Hammer, his hand clenched into a fist around his bow.
You saw the web. Those creatures are supposed to be extinct, ever since the Tanglewood was destroyed during the Demon War. If this fort is going to be full of things like that, things that shouldn't even exist, then I say we get the hell out of here right now, before something really nasty comes crawling out of the woodwork.
You disappoint me, Edmund. You really do. Look at you. I can remember when you were part of the Royal Guard itself. You killed the rebel blademaster Sir Gillum and stood with the king in the last great battle of the Demon War. Now all you can do is flap that stupid mouth of yours and jump out of your skin every time you see a shadow move.
I remember those times, too. I was younger then, and believed all the lies they told me about honor and duty. I know better now. I don't put my neck on the line for anyone but me.
You'll do whatever I tell you to do, won't you, Edmund?
Their eyes met for a long moment. Wild looked away first.
All right. We'll hole up for an hour. But I don't like it.
You don't have to.
Hammer turned his back on Wild and stalked off down the corridor. The bowman watched him go, his face icy cold, then moved off after Hammer. Jack brought up the rear, watching Wild's back thoughtfully. He hadn't known Wild possessed such a heroic past. Out of the 5,000 and more men and women who fought in the last great battle of the Demon War outside the Forest Castle, less than 200 survived, the bravest of the brave. That didn't sound much like the Edmund Wild Jack knew. The bowman was an outlaw and a murderer who shot most of his victims in the back. He looted and stole, fought for whoever would hire him, and there were at least 3 rape charges against him. Jack shook his head. He'd never understood people anyway. Hammer hurried down the corridor, checking each door he passed. The first 2 turned out to be a cupboard and a crowded storeroom, but the 3rd led off into a small annex. Hammer gave it a quick look over and nodded, satisfied.
Well, this will do. No windows and only the 1 door. Easy to defend and small enough to be overlooked. Get some rest, both of you. We'll give it an hour or so and then see how the land lies.
He waved the outlaws in, closed the door, and jammed a chair up against the doorknob. Then, while Jack and Wild were still looking around, he commandeered the only other chair and sat down. Hammer stretched his legs out before him. Wild glared at him, then turned away and thrust his torch into a wall holder with unnecessary violence. He sat down in a corner where he could watch the door, his back to the wall and his bow in his lap. Jack sat down in the opposite corner, wincing at the feel of the cold stone floor through his damp rags. He set his lantern down beside him and looked unenthusiastically around the annex. It was dark, stuffy, and far too small for his liking. And he was starting a cold. Some days you just couldn't win. Jack wriggled uncomfortably, searching in vain for a position that would let him relax. It seemed ages since he'd last laid down on a mossy riverbank, warmed by the summer sun. He sniffed resignedly and settled himself as best he could. He was tired, and a short rest would do him good. Just a short rest. On his chair facing the door, Hammer slept soundly, his chin on his chest. The long sword hung quietly in its scabbard, waiting and watching. Duncan McNeil plunged down one corridor after another, working his way determinedly through the warren of interconnecting corridors and passageways. Flint and the dancer hurried after him, with Constance bringing up the rear. McNeil glared angrily about him into the gloom. He was sure he'd heard the sound of fighting somewhere nearby, but so far he found no evidence to suggest there was anyone in the fort but the rangers. Occasionally, lightning would flare through one of the narrow embrasures, dazzling the rangers. The rest of the fort remained pitch dark. McNeil held his lantern out before him and did his best not to trip over anything. And then he rounded a corner and stopped dead in his tracks as he saw before him the remains of the huge web. The others crowded in beside him. Decaying strands of web still hung from the walls and ceiling, and the air was thick with the stench of corruption. Yellow bones, stained with old blood, lay scattered across the floor, and McNeil didn't need to examine them to know they were human.
What the hell happened here?
McNeil knelt down and looked closely at the floor. There were a few vague footprints, but not enough to track whoever made them. He didn't touch the bones or what remained of the web. He got to his feet and looked unhappily around him. None of it made any sense. He'd already been through this corridor once, less than 3 hours ago, and there'd been no trace of anything then. McNeil shook his head and smiled wryly. He should be used to things not making sense by now.
Constance, can you see what happened here?
Constance frowned and closed her eyes.
There were 3 men here, outlaws. One of them was Scarecrow Jack. Another was one of the guards who brought the gold here. They were fighting something, but I can't see what.
Whatever made the web, presumably. What else can you see?
Constance's brow furrowed as she concentrated.
There was something else here. Something apart from the outlaws and the web. Duncan, they've brought something evil into this fort. Something old and powerful. Oh.
She opened her eyes.
I can't see anything else. The 3 outlaws are gone. I could try tracking them with a spell, but calling up the magic needed would knock me out for several hours.
It's not worth it. Three outlaws aren't going to be much of a threat, no matter what they brought with them. And I might need your abilities. No, we'll track them down the hard way, checking every room till we find them. It'll take a while, but what with one thing and another, I doubt we'll be getting much sleep tonight anyway.
Constance looked at him, but didn't say anything. The outlaws had brought something awful into the fort, something that endangered them all, but her sight hadn't given her a clear picture of what it might be. And until she was sure, she couldn't say anything more to McNeil. He wouldn't just take her word for it. Even though he would have taken Salamander's word.
Strange coincidence.
What is?
We fought monsters down below, and now it seems the outlaws have been fighting something nasty here in the corridor. And we all dreamed of monsters. Maybe there's a connection.
Such as?
Beats me.
The Rangers stood together a while, thinking about the new turn of events, and McNeil frowned as an idea came to him.
I don't know about the rest of you, but it seems to me that if the outlaws were heading for anywhere in particular, it's almost bound to be the cellar. That's where the gold was supposed to have been stored, after all.
The others looked at him expectantly.
So?
So, I think we ought to get back down to the cellar first, so we can wait for them.
Flint and the dancer looked at each other. Constance looked at the floor. McNeil smiled suddenly.
It beats the hell out of a room-by-room search, doesn't it?
Ah, good point.
Flint looked directly at McNeil.
Why are you telling us all this? You lead this team. You make the decisions, and we back you up. That's the way it's always been.
This is different. This isn't the usual kind of case that Rangers have to face. There are dangers here that are way outside our usual scope. I don't think I have the right to just order you to follow me into danger. So I'm giving you all the chance to say no, if you want to.
I thought you'd got over Salamander's death by now. It wasn't your fault. You had no way of knowing that ambush was there. All right. Salamander had seen a danger in that town, but she couldn't see what it was. She died there because she made a mistake. And she decided to trust her sword instead of her magic. Giles and I trust your decisions. We always have. Are you going down into the cellar again?
Yes, I am.
Then the dancer and I are coming with you. We've been part of your team for 8 years now, and we've no mind to join another. Wherever you go, we go. Right, Giles?
Right.
McNeil looked at Constance, who smiled back at him.
Same here. After all, where would you be without me to look after you? I'm part of this team, too.
Let's go. We don't want the outlaws to get there first.
He turned and led the way back down the corridor so that they wouldn't see how moved he was by their loyalty. Flint and the dancer exchanged grins and moved off after him. Constance brought up the rear, humming tunelessly to herself.
More monsters, do you think?
Seems likely.
Good. You can use the exercise. You've been getting slow and sloppy lately.
Right. Over the hill and past it. That's me.
Behind them, Constance was smiling, but her eyes were far away. More than once, she'd sensed the presence in the fort, and it was at its strongest in the cellar. Now they were going back there. Constance's smile widened slightly. She'd never faced a real challenge to her powers before. She'd make McNeil proud of her yet.